Good evening. This is the NLA Hams Net. My name is Terry Moore. My call sign is KI0RE. We hold this net every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Everyone is invited to contribute, and I don't want to hold anyone back. Your ideas and contributions are greatly appreciated. I would like to take a quick
check in, are you looking for? Or no.
Yeah, check in. Oh, please, everyone, check in. I would like to have your call sign and your state and your first name. If you don't have a call sign, then your state and your first name is sufficient, or your first name and then your state, either way. So, who all's out there tonight? Go ahead and call now.
This is Kima Whiskey 4 X-Ray Golf, or KW4XG Wonder Ann, reporting in.
You're in South Carolina?
I'm sorry, yeah, South Carolina. Over.
Who else?
This is Kilo, Charlie, 3 Hotel Victor Alpha, Pennsylvania Dan, checking in. Over.
Okay, who else is out there?
This is Kilo, Mike, 4, Whiskey, Uniform Juliet, Houston, Florida.
Was Bruce from Florida? Did I understand you correctly, Bruce? Is that Bruce from Florida? KM4WUJ?
KM4WUJ.
Okay. And your name is Bruce from Florida, right?
Right.
Okay, thank you. All right, anybody else?
This is Greg from Florida.
Thank you, Greg. We're glad you're here. And we're glad you're here, too, Bruce, Jan, and Wonder Ann. Okay, anybody else?
Jan from Kansas.
Well, hi, Jan from Kansas. It's good to hear you again. You in on the new number or the old number?
I'm on the new number.
Oh, great. It's working is what I understand. I think you proved that to everybody. And so it's good to hear that you're on. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Anybody else?
That would like...
Okay. Hearing none, if you get in or you hear somebody get on, go ahead and check in. You can give your call sign if you want to stop me, or you can just announce your name and your state since we're here on the conference call. I am Terry, and I'm turning now to page 2-1. The page before 2-1 shows the U.S. Amateur Radio Technician privileges, effective 5 March 2012. And I could go over and say it's 23 centimeters, 33 centimeters, and 70 centimeters on UHF, 1.25 meters, 2 meters, and 6 meters on VHF, and 10 meters, 15 meters, and 40 meters, and 80 meters on HF. Now, I didn't realize that we're getting privileges down at HF, so that's a new thing to me. I didn't realize that technicians were getting that. One of the things that I wanted to talk about tonight, let's see if I can find it, because I moved it around. There it is. Glenn Beck talked about him. And his name is Edwin Howard Armstrong. Anybody here knows who Edward Howard Armstrong is?
No.
Edwin Howard Armstrong was a man who was born in 1890. He died in 1954, so I was almost 1 year old when he died at age 63. He's a pretty amazing man. He became an electrical engineer. He grew up in the Chelsea district of New York, went to Oxford University and all this stuff. He was pretty smart. He was the one credited with coming up with what's called a regenerative circuit. Now, I'm getting some of my material from Wikipedia and some from Glenn Beck. If you get a chance to see Glenn Beck, he did an entire hour on this person and the people around him. One of the things that they found, if you look at the signals that were coming in, were very, very tiny, and it was all Morse code because nobody really knew how to put a voice on. And you would hold your earphones up against your ears trying to listen to that 1 week signal. That's CQ in Morse code. Well, he started working with a tube called an audion. Lee DeForest had made that in 1906. And he found a way to use that tube to amplify, and it's called a regenerative circuit. You take a little bit of the signal and pipe it back into a different portion of the tube, and it starts doing things for you. Well, that was good. He got a patent on it. The patent was contested, and he fought all over the place to try and get credit for what he had done. Later, in the Army Signal Corps, he became at first a captain and then later a major. And he was in the Army Signal Corps because Sarnoff said to keep him around. but during this period, his most significant accomplishment was the development of a supersonic heterodyne, which is superhet or superheterodyne. Radio's receiver circuit. And what you do with a superhead is you're taking a little bit of that regenerative circuit so that it amplifies the part you want, and then you put about three of them together, and you also take it down to a specific frequency called the intermediate frequency before you send it out. And the superhead is using that intermediate frequency in stages. And now they got it loud enough so that you could hear the radio without having earphones squished to your head in a quiet place. Well, he kept doing that and then making things up like that. And there was one problem. Has anybody ever gone and listened to an AM radio when they're driving? Anybody done it?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Definitely. And what happens when you go under a bridge?
It's gone.
It's quiet.
Yeah, it goes away, doesn't it? Also, what happens when there's a storm in the area?
Noisy.
Static.
So there's lots of static, and it would go in and out. Well, it was Edwin H. or Howard Armstrong who designed a new type of circuit called one approach considered as a potential solution was frequency modulation. But you know, when they first did it, they used narrowband FM, and everybody thought it wouldn't work because it didn't work for them. What Armstrong did was you make it so it would work with wideband FM. This was a revelation. Now, there are several characteristics of a radio wave. One is the frequency. How fast does it go through one cycle? A positive voltage to a negative voltage back to the center. And then related to that by a specific frequency is how long the wavelength is. How all radio signals travel at the speed of light in a vacuum. They slow down in the air only slightly, and you can't tell the difference between going the speed of light anyway. So depending upon the frequency will also depend, since they're all traveling at the speed of light, they have a particular wavelength at a particular frequency. And you can use the formula wavelength, which is lambda, equals the, let's see, what is it? I'm going to tell you wrong here in just a second if I don't watch it. And I don't see it right off, but it's C, which is the speed of light, divided by the frequency. So if you take the speed of light, divide by the frequency, you get the wavelength. If you take the speed of light, divide it by the wavelength, you get the frequency. So the higher frequencies, the wavelength is shorter and shorter. So if you look at the HF thing on 2-1, we start at 80 meters, which is 3.4 megahertz, around 4 megahertz. 40 meters is around 7 megahertz. 15-meter wavelength is around 21 megahertz. So as you get up, the length of the wave is getting shorter. And that is the characteristic that gives radio waves all their different characteristics, where they bounce or they don't bounce. By the time you get up to UHF, one of the bands that you have privileges in as a radio amateur technician is 1.24, about 1.3 gigahertz, just 1,300 megahertz. Well, that's really zipping along, and the wavelength is only 23 centimeters. Now, I have a ruler here, and I look at how far 23 centimeters are, and it's about roughly 9 inches. That's how far a wave goes. Just as a side note, Admiral Hopper, who was an admiral in the Navy, she knew computers very well. And when she would visit a place, she would have all of these about a foot, pieces of wire cut to about a foot, a little less than a foot, 10 inches or so. And she would hand them out. And people would say, "What is this?" And she said, "That's a nanosecond." Well, how is a piece of wire a nanosecond? It's the distance that light travels in 1 nanosecond, which is 1 billionth of a second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and if I'm wrong, you should tell me, because I get some things messed up. Okay, side note over. So Armstrong created a way to use wideband FM and use frequency modulated. All the radios up until that time have been using what's called amplitude modulation. So as a signal would go up and down at a rate of a voice, the signal would get taller and weaker. And as you went out away from where you were transmitting from, your signal would get gradually less and less and less, until some distance away, you really had to work to hear it. And when they did Morse code, they would take that signal. You really had to be listening for it. It was just whether the signal is there or it's not there. And that's all you had. And if it was there, you would hear a deet. And if it wasn't there, you would hear a nothing. But it suffered from the same things that AM radio suffers from. As a matter of fact, what does the AM and the AM radio stand for? Anybody know?
Amplitude modulation.
stations.
Very good. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And the FM in FM radio, what does that stand for?
Frequency modulation.
Yeah, we got two of you there then. Frequency modulation. So he found a way to change the signal in accordance with, by applying your voice in a specific way so that you could hear it. And lo and behold, when he did, using a wide band, it gained a couple of things. One, you couldn't hear the static anymore. It was gone. Another thing was the fidelity was great. And another thing was is that a close station would lock on when you went to a frequency, and it would reject somebody with a less, with a further away signal that was less powerful on the same frequency. So if there was another station transmitting on the same station as the one you wanted to listen to, if you were close to the one you wanted to listen to, the receiver would actually reject it. And they call that the capture thing, the capture, I forget what it's called, capture characteristic of FM radio. Well, Armstrong made that. And when TV came along, they used FM so that the sound would not suffer from static. And there was a whole bunch of stuff of where they're going to put that in the band plan and how it was going to go. And then I wanted to tell you this. Although there was, I'm reading from Wikipedia under Edwin H. Armstrong. Although there was interest in the new FM band by station owners, construction restrictions that went into place during World War II limited the growth of the new service. Following the end of World War II, the FCC moved to standardize its frequency allocations. One area of concern was the effects of tropospheric and sporadic E propagation, which at times reflected station signals over great distances, causing mutual interference. A particularly controversial proposal spearheaded by RCA, David Sarnoff, was the FM band needed to be shifted to higher frequencies in order to avoid this problem. This assignment was fiercely opposed by as unneeded by Armstrong, but in the end he lost out and the FM band was reallocated, becoming 100 channels from 88 to 108 megahertz. That's where it is today. After a short period of allowing existing stations to broadcast on both their old and new frequencies, the original transmitters had to be shut down, making the expensive receivers that had been purchased by the public, the original band, obsolete. Now, why is it good to know this? Because they were using 42 to 50 megahertz. And if you look at that chart across from page 2-1, you'll note that the 6-meter band is 50 to 54 megahertz. Well, oddly enough, or maybe not oddly at all, 50 megahertz, the 6-meter band, still suffers from tropospheric and sporadic E propagation. And that means you can be transmitting here and listening to your guy, and you're having a nice conversation, and all of a sudden a guy in Hawaii starts talking to you. Now, how can that happen? The other guy I'm talking to is just 100 miles up the road. Well, it happens because there has what's called sporadic E. The different layers of the atmosphere, even a different temperature inversion, can cause it to where it gets up in the troposphere, and it goes back and forth between two layers, and it goes for miles. It's like being in the duct that's 1,500 miles long, and then it comes out. So it was suffering from that. The ham band at 50 megahertz still suffers from that, and that's how, talking about this, that's how FM got up to 88 to 108 megahertz. I thought you'd like to know that. AM is still where it was put. And AM, if you'll notice, is centered around 1,000 megahertz. 1,000 kilohertz, excuse me. Kilohertz. So if you look, it goes from 540 to 1760, I think. I can't remember. So it's centered on 1,000 kilohertz. That's all they thought they would need. So anyway, Armstrong, we all talk on radios that use FM. Now I'm sorry? Somebody want to say something?
That
when
was
you
a
talk.
Spurious emission, I'm afraid.
Very good. A spurious emission. So I just kind of wanted to educate you. I have one other thing the hams are very noted about. Armstrong. He built an amplifier that really does a good job. When amplifiers first came in, they would drop out around the zero voltage, they would drop out, you'd get skipping and clipping and everything else. Armstrong built a receiver that an amplifier that reproduced the wave all the way across through the band. And that's still used today in certain radios. But when you see radios on TV, when the military talks, you can take your handheld transceiver and 5 watts, putting out 5 watts or 8 watts, and if you've got the right antenna, a Yagi or some other kind of high-gain antenna, directional antenna, you can point it at the space shuttle or other satellites as they go over. And you can talk to them standing out in the middle of a field away from the trees. You can talk to them on your 5-watt handheld. What are you using? You're using FM modulation. Everything that we do in UHF and VHF, almost everything, is FM, frequency modulation. It was Armstrong that first created that. Any questions tonight? The silence was deafening.
Interesting. Interesting comment, though.
Yeah. We didn't even have it in our test or anything.
You didn't have what?
I never heard his name mentioned in any of the testing we did.
Nope, you won't.
It kind of came back to me a little bit as you started talking about it. If you said Superhead, I would have recognized it. It goes back to my pet peeve about scientific things. They name the phenomenon after the individual that found it rather than the phenomenon. It'd be a lot simpler if they just named the phenomenon, then you wouldn't have to worry about all those names. Over.
Yeah, I agree. Like, why do we call it a hertz?
Yeah.
That's the fella's name. Mr. Hertz.
And Volt.
Yeah, Volt. Volt, ohm.
And amp. Ampere. Yeah.
Ampere.
There
hertz. Is a. Faraday. These are all people, scientists, who discovered some principle or were well noted, and they needed to call this new measurement something, and they picked the guy's name, and his name is forever attached to that. There was a Mr. Ampere. There was a Mr. Hertz. There was a Mr. Ohm. There was a Mr. Volt. These are all people that existed, and they learned something, and then when they came to call some new to make measurements with, They need a new unit of measurement. They would call them by the names of these people. It's pretty cool when you start working all that out. Anybody else want to comment or got a story?
I'd like to offer a word or two in defense of AM radio, in the old days anyway. As a kid, I lived in north central Iowa up along the Minnesota border. And they have what they call clear channel stations, AM stations. And there was a station in Del Rio, Texas. And as you probably all know, transmitters on AM were limited to 50,000 watts max. Well, this group was pretty bright. They were close to the border. They ran a cable over the border, put the transmitter in Mexico, and they broadcasted 100,000 watts. So in the middle of the night, when the conditions were not good, I could go out and be working in the shop and listen to Del Rio, Texas, and get reasonably good reception, even though it was country and western, and that wasn't my thing, but I had something to listen to. Over.
That still happens. There are what's called clear channel stations. Those are allocations in the AM band. 850 KOA is one of them. They don't have to turn their power back at night because the layers of the atmosphere start reflecting the AM band radio waves at night. So everybody turns down their power everywhere except for the clear channel stations. So 8:50 a.m., you won't go back to New York, and well, you might go back to New York, but you won't find in South Dakota another station on 850 kilohertz. You won't find it in Nevada. You won't find it in Arizona. You find it right here in Colorado, KOA. And that's because KOA doesn't have to turn their power back. If you'll notice, when you're listening to a particular AM station, sometimes the sun goes down, they announce sundown, and all of a sudden it's really hard to hear them. They're really weak. That's why. And we don't want to cause any problems with any other stations. If you had a real strong station on 850 KOA and another one in Detroit, they might interfere with each other. So that's why they make certain channels clear. And there are clear channels that are designated, and they don't have to turn their power back at sunset. And, of course, if you're not a clear channel station, you can turn your power back up at sunrise, because then the atmosphere quits taking that signal and sending it halfway across the planet, or a quarter of the way across the planet. That makes sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay, does anyone have any issues or questions they'd like to ask? I would like to ask Greg and Jan, maybe Greg first, how are you coming on finding a ham, studying, or finding a ham radio club in your area? Greg, could you let us know?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
It's Harley from Vermont. How you all doing?
Pretty good. Hi, Harley.
Listen, I had a question about my programming on my radio, and I'm not certified with a call name or anything, so I probably don't do that much with it, but there's this concept of three on the threes.
Yes.
And there's on my list anyway, there's one that says, can transmit, use this for the threes, and it's at frequency 151.94.
Right. It's a merge channel.
What can you tell me about that whole protocol? And, like, if we had a SHTF, you know, what would you recommend according to that protocol for NLA people?
Okay. The it's called a wilderness protocol in HEMS. It might be called something on the MERS. The idea is that you don't want to be turning on your radio all day long and waiting for people to call. You want to turn it on at a specific time and actually transmit at that time and then listen for other people doing the same thing.
Right.
Maybe transmit for two times. So it's a way to establish that initial contact without wearing down the battery of your radio. That was why it was set up like that. Now, do we use it all the time? No, not all the time. Will we need to use it? Possibly in the future. It's a way to get people back in touch. Okay, I would transmit here and I would listen. And if somebody heard me, I could start talking to them and find out where they are. Maybe they're 20 miles up the road and they've got water and I don't. I want to know where that is. And so I head that direction. Something like that. Does that answer your question?
I caught the concept pretty quickly. I'm kind of a Boy Scout, you know, and I was more like interested in, I got my programming with my radio with you guys, so I suspect that's, you know, going to be common among us all to know that. Is that, what frequency is that specifically? And, you know, would that be the right one for us to do on the threes? You know, it's also a not just a battery resource, but maybe a time resource or availability. Like, you could leave your radio on all the time, probably nowadays with batteries, but, you know, can you talk? Can you be expected to answer? And if people are expecting to try to get a hold of each other at a certain frequency, also every 3 hours, that depends on when you start. You know what I mean?
The idea is that you start at noon,
okay,
and then 3 p.m., and then 6 p.m., 9 p.m., midnight, 3 a.m., 6 a.m., 9 a.m.,
yeah,
noon. So,
okay, that
so
would make
that's
sense to have this protocol. Yeah, okay.
Okay. And yes, Jan, do you want to add to that at all?
Your MERS channels are there, but they're not too useful because they're very low power. Are they 1 or 3 watts, somewhere in there? So that they do not carry very far, so they're not that useful. What we will do when we get enough people signed up is have a threes, and it will have a particular frequency assigned, and it will be for those people that have a radio that has, say like the Bofang, the 8-watt, with a reasonable range. Some of the people are claiming pretty good ranges on those things, out to 10 to 20 miles in some areas. So that when we get enough people involved, we will pick that frequency. It'll be in a VHF band, I would assume, and it will be made known to all the members, not just those that have purchased a radio from us. We'll send it out to everybody so anybody can use it. And once, if we have a need, we will send out probably through the newsletter or something that, we're starting a 3 schedule. And if you want to tune in and communicate or see what's happening, why, go ahead and then hit the 12, 3, 9, and 12 scenario and you'll be all set. It's basically there for somebody that wants to practice and maybe talk next door or down the block or whatever. It isn't that long a range. It might get out to a mile, maybe a little more. It's like a fancy walkie-talkie as far as capability.
You're talking about those low frequencies in the, like, 151 range of
right,
MERS?
Those 5 MERS frequencies that are pre-programmed. All those 5 you can transmit without a license, and they're all...
Gotcha.
Power they have. Is it 1 watt, Terry, or is it 3 watts limit?
I think it's 2 watt limit is what I remember.
Okay, I think there was a problem in that the Bofang has 8, 4, and 1 watt capability. So 4 is over the 3 watt limit, so you'd be limited to 1 watt on that. And that's probably true of a lot of the small handhelds. They step down power in fairly large steps, so you may end up with 1 watt. If you're lucky, you have a 3 watt setting, you could transmit at 3 watts. Over.
You know, the Bofangs are not approved for Muirs. You're not supposed to use them on Muirs for two reasons. One, they're Muirs only allows 2 watts, and they're, you know, 4 or 5 watts, and also they don't conform to the bandwidth of the Muirs frequencies.
Well, you can step the power level down. That's not a problem. I haven't checked the bandwidth, though.
What do you mean by conform? It's either on that bandwidth or it's not, right?
Well, that frequency.
Well, the FCC has to approve a radio to be used on a band. And the Bofangs are not approved for the Muirs frequencies.
Well, I got the official thing. I was trying to understand the scientific part of it.
The idea that to modulate a signal in FM, it does take a particular bandwidth to do it. And the two major ways is narrowband FM and wideband FM. I don't know what the requirements are for MERS. Please backfill if you can, Jan. But if you're not doing the right modulation on a particular channel, or it's too wide or where it should be too narrow, or too narrow where it should be wide, that's what they're talking about. Jan?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm not sure what that frequency, the Bofang bandwidth, is. If it's over what the FCC requires for that, then there'd be a problem. It may be that they just haven't checked it. I do not know. Never looked into that since I wasn't planning on using those 5 bands.
Well, I guess my only other question that was on my mind about this protocol and just in general, you know, getting our baby steps, you know, at some point in the future during one of these teleconferences, could we do like a live test in the background? Is that in the cards? Does that require us picking a particular, at least temporary band that's supposed to do it on?
Well,
the radios that we have now with the Bofangs are not suitable for long-distance communications. If you want to do that in your area, I would suggest getting some hams that will listen and talk and try and establish contact. We need to go in the HF when we do that, when we try and get it over a wide area. That will take a little bit of work. We're not there yet. Do we want to get there? Yes, we want to get there so that we can transmit the Monday night call or whatever we need over a particular way to get the word out to as many people as we can. HF will talk to a lot of people across a wide region, and it does get affected.
Apologize for breaking in. Can you hug and stand forward on any of those frequencies, though, like for a broadcast? I thought we were... I think there's a technical distinction there.
Well, okay. If I said broadcast, it was my mistake. I mean transmit. What we're doing is like when you're doing a net, there might be a lot of people. But if you're talking to one other station and a bunch of people are listening in, that's okay. Like we are right now.
Yeah, so it's essentially just a talk with whomever is appropriate breaking in. And I don't see that could be interfered with or be objected to, really.
No, you can't. But you do have to have the right equipment. And HF equipment starts getting up and expensive. Let's get our feet wet and try to organize locally so that we can provide communications for the committees of safety. That was the idea. Have you read our communications plan up on the NLA website?
I'm not sure I did the communication one. The other one, yeah.
see if you might want to check. Go ahead, Terry.
Go ahead, Jan. You've got a better handle on this.
You might want to check your local area and find out the frequency of the repeaters in your area and see if you're close enough to be able to at least listen to the repeater when it talks. And if you have a license, then you can talk to the repeater and see if they can hear you. If that is the case, then you can communicate within probably, depending on where that repeater sits, maybe up to a 10 to 20 mile radius just on your little radio. But you need to get in contact with that repeater, and like Terry has explained in previous sessions, that once you're tied into that repeater, like here, we've got two of them. They're about 20 miles apart. They talk to each other, so I can get out to maybe 40 to 60 miles west of me by talking to my little repeater here that's only 5 miles across the valley. And I can go north, south, east, west pretty well, although directionally more west than other directions. So with your little Bofang, you need to find the repeater and see if you are in that range. If you are, then you will get a pretty good range out of it. It won't be like HF where it comes down 500 miles away sometimes or 1,200 miles away at others, but it'll certainly get you in contact with the other people, at least in your area, and your emergency services and that sort of thing if you need them. I assume they are all on your pre-programmed schedule, right, Harley?
Yeah, I'm actually getting, you know, sheriffs and 911 dispatchers and fire, EMS, etc.
Right.
And then there's four ham radio, mostly, all associated with Saratoga Racetrack.
Oh, okay. Are you into the...
I'm. Happens to be where I'm at. So.
Yep.
Excellent, Harley. The one thing that you can do is listen to the way they talk. Listen how they have short messages that communicate lots of information, and then they're back off the air. That's an essential skill that has to be learned, and every ham can improve on that. You don't know how many people I've heard on the radio that they key up, and then they're thinking about what they're going to say, and they start saying it, and then wait as they try and figure out what they were going to say. I've done it myself, and I just want to kick myself when I do something like that. The key, in both terms, is to unkey. The key is to unkey. Then lots of times you have people that know what you're trying to say, and they'll help you say it if you just unkey. So listen to how they talk and learn how you're going to say that same type of thing when you get a chance to talk.
You're looking for high density of information.
Absolutely. That's a good way to put it. And so if you only need something, you say it and you get off. Okay, are there any other questions?
One last thing. I know you've mentioned previously that there is a website where you can go, and I think it's your area code, not your area code, your zip code that you punch in, and it'll tell you the nearest repeater and what frequency it is. I can put that on the ham site there so people can go up and just punch in the area code and find their repeater, and they can just plug that frequency in and listen and see if there's they can hear it.
I think that's a very good idea, Jan.
Okay, I'll do that as soon as I can.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Harley, did we exhaust yours?
No, I mean, that's pretty good. I won't stand forth on it. I just agree that it'll be nice. We can get maybe a nexus of high power users, you know, to spread a signal at the same time that we're having one of these, you know, conference calls and do some paralleling, you know, just learn, you know, and actually do physical connecting of people who would handle traffic in the future at the same time.
I agree. How shall we do that? I would like everybody to familiarize themselves with the communications plan. My vision is for each of us to get involved with a radio club near our area and to find hams that have HF gear that want to do the communications for us, and then get them into NLA, and let's start having it. If we only connect from here in Colorado to California or Florida to South Carolina, that's enough to get started doing this. And we start doing it different ways, and we figure out how we want to do it and how it to be done. And if one of them's Vermont, that's great. Let's do it. So but if we can either wait for people to obtain ham radio gear and the expertise to go on these HF bands and then start doing it and start lining it up, or we can get some hams involved in NLA and doing that communications. I'm good with either one because that's what it's going to take. And please read the comm plan, everyone. Anything else?
Comm plans on the ham page. Right.
It's under COS on the ham page.
Up in the blue banner, if you go to COS, yep. It's the ham communications plan.
Awesome.
So everybody take a look. We are out of time. I want to thank everybody for coming to the NLA Hams Net. This net is conducted every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. until about 10. Oh, come on. Stand by just a second.
I like your sound effects.
I want to thank everybody, and I'm going to call the net closed at 18:47 according to my clock. So good night, everybody. Thank you. And